Cannon Fodder is brought to you by Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Hello and welcome to Cannon Fodder. Today is Thursday, the 4th of April, 2019. Three more days remaining in the National Hockey League regular season. The entire league is basically playing tonight, except for your Columbus Blue Jackets. They finish with a back-to-back at Rangers Friday night, at Ottawa Saturday night, both games 7 p.m. And I guess if you like conspiracy theories, you can thank the league. The Jackets are only one of, there's only three games Friday night. So, and of those six teams playing on Friday night, among them are only the five teams that are finishing with a back-to-back, including your Columbus Blue Jackets. And so it goes. Brian Hedger's with me. I'm Mike Arace. We have Patrick Flaherty at the controls per usual. Again, today is Thursday, the 4th of April, 2019. It's just after 10 as we begin recording. All right, we're going to cut out here. Here for just a second and hear from our sponsor. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It's Make It Count Rewards from Marathon. Save on gas, airfare, hotels, or support the environment. It's easy to sign up. Text JOIN to 40244 or go to makeitcount.com. Sign up today. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
You can whine about finishing with a back-to-back, but to me, after 80 games, you know, Brian, the points probably left out there over the course of 80 games. No one can complain about anything right now.
No, and actually, John Tortorella yesterday did his weekly radio show, you know, the Hockey and Hounds thing on 97.1, and, you know, one thing, he just hit it on the head, said, you know what, we put ourselves in this position as far as, especially at home.
All right, let's...
You know, like, they right. have not won enough games at home.
They are, as a matter of fact, 22-17-2 at home. And that at one point they were 17-16 at home, and they're 23-14-2 on the road, which I guess is the bright side of things. Now we should set up what their position is exactly. The Metropolitan Division has the Washington Capitals on top. They have 102 points and 43 regulation and overtime wins. So 102 points, 43 rows, as they're known. In second place, the New York Islanders, who, like Washington, has clinched a playoff spot with a couple games to go. They are 46-27-7, 99 points for the Islanders, 42 rows. Third place in the Metro, I guess, gettable, Brian. Pittsburgh Penguins, they're 43-26-11, 97 points, 41 rows. And then the wild card teams. Carolina has 95 points and 42 rows, 44-29-7, so 44 wins, 95 points, 42 rows. The Jackets, 45 wins, 94 points, 44 rows. And the difference between the teams, the Carolinas have picked up three extra points with overtime losses, and that explains the difference in points. Carolina has one fewer victory and three more overtime losses, and there's your one-point disparity. Carolina, 95 points. Jackets, 94 points. But they have the first tiebreaker, which is regulation and overtime wins. The Jackets do. They're 44 to Carolina's 42 to Pittsburgh's 41. Now, Pittsburgh is home against Detroit tonight, and then they finish home against the Rangers on Saturday. The Carolinas are home against the Devils tonight, and they finish at Philadelphia on Saturday. Montreal, which is 3 points behind the Jackets for the second wild card, 41 points.
I think they're tied in
points. Oh, excuse me. They're tied in points. You're correct. They're three rows behind. So Jackets, 94 points, 44 rows. Montreal, 94 points, 41 rows.
Yep.
The Montreals finish at Washington tonight and home against Toronto Saturday night. Oh, that'll be some hockey night in Canada, especially after the Bruins' victory here on Tuesday night assured the Bruins home ice advantage in the first round against the Maple Leafs. And the Jackets finish at Rangers Friday, at Ottawa Saturday. So a quick little turnaround there on the Eastern Seaboard with the back-to-back, one of only five teams finishing with a back-to-back. But anyway, there you go. Brian, you've had a couple days to process this. We're going to get to the loss and what kind of streaks came to an end in Nationwide Arena on Tuesday night when the Bruins were in town and slapped the Jackets with a 6-2 loss in front of a sellout crowd that was waiting to explode and never had the chance. But let's just talk about the race at the top here. How's this going to go down? Well, no one knows, do they?
No. I mean, again, just like you said, it's another sellout crowd that was basically primed and ready to explode, you know, with excitement and have a playoff clinch and, you know, maybe our potential playoff clinch. And just, you know, another, it wasn't, I mean, they lost 6-2. I thought they had a decent start, but yeah, so they, it's another opportunity loss. They're 6-8-1 in home sellout this year, another poor record. So it comes down to that, but I mean, how's it going to play out? I mean, you got to like, you're the Carolina Hurricanes, you kind of like what they're finishing up with, right? New Jersey Devils and Philadelphia Flyers.
Yep.
I mean, if they, all they got to do is take care of business, and they take care of that kind of business, and they're going to finish in that first wild card, since they're a point ahead of the Jackets right now. I mean, it would take a pretty big stumble, I think, for them to lose. Those are two bad teams. I mean, Philly's not, they're not nearly as bad as New Jersey, but still not a great team. Montreal, how much fun would it be for the Toronto Maple Leafs to keep Montreal out of the playoffs on Hockey Night in Canada in the last game of the season? I think they would enjoy that.
True, but it works in the reverse as well. It'd be a lot of fun in Quebec if Montreal pinned the loss on Toronto and kept their hopes alive.
Oh, yeah.
In any case, if the Jackets win their last two games,
They're in.
And they'll have either the first or the second wild card. Probably the second, given Carolina's schedule. And those are winnable games for the Jackets, too, given the way they've played on the road.
Yep.
As we've seen in this market in years past, you kind of never know what you're going to get. These are true box of chocolate games for teams like the Rangers and the Senators, who are basically positioning for lottery. There's been so many years here in the past where the Jackets, it would have behooved them to lose, and they went on these winning streaks in non-playoff seasons at the end of the year. We'll see what happens there with the Rangers in Ottawa, but you'd have to expect with this in front of them now, and this is their final test of the regular season. I mean, at Rangers, at Ottawa, got to win them, period.
You got to win them, and how about this for a scenario? And I think we've talked about it a little bit before, but you're finishing the season against Ottawa, where you got two of your players at the deadline, Matthew Shane and Ryan Dzingel, and you traded away Anthony Duclair to the Senators. So now Duclair, you got to figure Duclair's probably going to be in the lineup playing on that game. I mean, I don't know if you want to take that chance. They want to win, you know, on Friday and then hope Montreal loses to Washington and then clinch it, because I don't think you want to go into that last game against the Senators with any kind of potential of Anthony Duclair being able to beat you and end your season after you traded him away. Ryan Dzingel.
Fair enough.
It's a great story, Ryan, though.
And again, this is a volatile time of year, these last few days of the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
But if form holds the way you think it should, and again, it may not, there's a 50-50 chance it won't, given the volatility of the times. Jackets end up with a second wild card, which many perceive to be a death sentence in the first round of the playoffs. Do you agree with that? Playing the Tampa Bay Lightning is instant. It's just a losing proposition. Obviously, huge underdog. You thought about this, Brian. You've had to for weeks now.
I have, and I go back and forth on it, because I feel, this is one thing, I feel like the Lightning are a team that could be potentially vulnerable against a team that plays the way the Blue Jackets play when they're playing good, if that makes any sense. So when the Blue Jackets are playing good hockey, they're playing just like you were saying in your column, that whole, you know, five guys around the puck and all
when
that
they're connected.
Line. Yeah, connected and physical. You know, like when they run that line out there, the quote-unquote identity line, whichever one it happens to be, you know, Jenner, what used to be Foligno, Jenner, and Anderson, and now it's Foligno, Dubinsky, and Nash. Actually, it goes Dubinsky, Nash, Foligno, but that's neither here nor there. When they run those two lines out there and they start burying people, that's not a style that Tampa Bay prefers to play. I don't think that they're built to play that kind of style, and I think sometimes playoff hockey, you know, which is different than the regular season, just because the intensity level does in fact pick up, you know, and the physicality picks up, and I think most importantly, I think the officials call things looser in the playoffs, not tighter, you know? And a lot of it depends on what the officials think. I mean, you end up giving the Lightning a bunch of power plays, you're going to be swept out of that series. Bottom line, this is the best power play in the league, and even with a great penalty kill like the Blue Jackets have, and it is a great penalty kill, you're just asking for trouble if you give them a lot of penalties. But if they're calling it looser and not sending it to the box for, you know, a few little hidden hold and hook and slat, you know, things like that here and there, you know, muscling up on guys in the corner, I think that team could be had. You know, I think you can get under their skin a little bit, and I think you could disrupt the way they want to play hockey.
There's whoever plays Tampa Bay, and by the way, the Lightning 60 victories, 16 losses, 4 overtime losses, 124 points, 54 rows, and they're plus 98. They're probably going to be over, for a goal differential. They're going to finish over. They're going to finish plus 100 and change probably. Prohibitive underdog, whoever plays them in the first round. But you know, in the East, Brian, parity reigns so much that almost any other playoff matchup is a pick 'em. You know?
Yeah.
If they do get into that first wild card spot against slight odds or odds to their detriment, if they can overcome those odds, they'd get the Capitals. They'd be the Metro champion.
I think they would be licking their chops on that one.
Yeah, a rematch would be great.
Yeah, it's a rematch. They feel like they had them last year and just kind of let it get away, you know, and then watch the Capitals go and win the Stanley Cup. Yeah, no, I mean, I think they feel like last year they kind of had them. They had the Capitals in a great position for them, and then just let it get away. And they would love to have a second chance to kind of, you know, right that wrong in their mind. And they played really well against the Capitals in all but one game this year.
Right. Plus, you have the Caps, and you don't necessarily fear them. And you don't have the Lightning in the first round if you sneak up into that first wild card. And they have 124 points. I mean, it's one of the, they're going to have one of the three greatest seasons in modern NHL history. So anyway, I want to ask you, Hedman, and most fans do are very well aware of what the forward lines look like, but just go over their constitution. We're going to segue into the Boston loss and what happened before that. But I want to talk about their forward lines, their defense, and what it looks like now, the injuries they have in the back, and how Bob's playing. So let's start with the forwards. How do you think the lines will be constituted in at Madison Square Garden tomorrow night?
Well, I think Tortorella is going to probably keep them the same. I mean, he might have some light changes here and there. You never know. We'll have to see if they look like at practice today. But I think you're at a point in the season now where all that line blender stuff and, you know, all that kind of, I think it's not like completely out of the question that you break some stuff up. But there's only two games left. And, you know, aside from that Boston loss, they had won five games in a row and by a combined 24-4 margin. I don't think you just go away from that. So I would expect them to keep the same forward lines together, and that would be, you know, Panarin and Atkinson on the top line, centered by Duchesne. That would be Dzingel and Anderson, yeah, you know, centered on the second line by Dubois. Third line would be, you know, Alexander Wennberg at center with Jenner and, you know, Boone Jenner and Oliver Bjorkstrand, who is red hot on the right wing. And then you'd have the one I mentioned earlier, kind of identity line part two, when you got Dubinsky on the left, Nash in the middle, and Foligno on the right. I think that's how they're going to line up tomorrow, unless, you know, unless John Tortorella decides that somebody needs to come out after watching the video of that Boston game. Defensively, I would say, on the defensive pairings, you're going to still have the same. You're going to have Werenski Jones up top. You're going to have Nudivar Savard in the second. And unless, now the third one's a little bit of a question, because we don't know about McQuaid. If McQuaid is right, he's got an upper body injury, he's elbowed in the head by Andrew Shaw, who got only a 2-minute minor for interference on that play and no hearing.
Ridiculously suspendable, yeah, as the coach said.
Absolutely. And, you know, you have to think that he's out with a concussion right now. That's what my guess would be. They're saying he's day-to-day. So if he's ready, if McQuaid is ready to play, then you would see, my guess would be Kukan on the left, Dean Kukan, and then, you know, McQuaid would be on the right, and I think Scott Harrington would probably be the one on the outside looking in there as the seventh guy. And if McQuaid's not ready, it's going to be the same as last game. It's going to be Harrington on the left and Kukan on the right.
And if their season does, when it comes to an end, I think if it's perceived as premature, the way the defense thinned out with the Murray injury and then McQuaid had filled that hole admirably, at least added the depth to the defense that they were looking for when they acquired him at the trade deadline, and his losses hurt them. And I think they'll look back on that and say, dang, just kind of thinned out in the third pair, and that added pressure to the top four defense, which is very good. Bob was on a bit of a heater, Brian. Well, let's talk about what they looked like heading into the Boston game Tuesday night. They looked like Stanley Cup contenders for five games. The plan that was set forth at the trade deadline finally came together, and as you wrote about Duchesne, you can see the way he viewed things was it was going to take time, and then boy, it started clicking. They put Duchesne up on the top line a few games ago, and or more than a few games ago, and everything made sense up front. They won five games in a row, as you said, by a combined 24-4. And then at that point, they're holding the one wild card. They're looking up at third place in the Metro and thinking, why not? And you look at their roster and you go like, man, you know, with that proviso that the defense was kind of thinned out. You look at their roster and you go, and I've said this, if you were looking at it from the vantage point of another NHL market, if you're looking at this team and you saw, you know, 720 goal scorers and 625 goal scorers, you're going like, man, that team's pretty loaded. You know, they're loaded and ready to go. They won 5 in a row, 24-4. They had a chance to clinch with a victory over the Bruins in their regular season home finale on Tuesday night. And the Bruins stomped on them 6-2. And lest we forget, it's not like the Bruins had nothing to play for. They'd been struggling a little bit. They'd lost 3 of their previous 4. And they had home ice in the first round against Toronto to clinch, which they did. So they were motivated, and essentially they just outworked and out-talented and physically overwhelmed the Jackets on Tuesday night. And it was rather stunning, given how the Jackets have been mowing down teams in 5 previous games. Your thoughts on Tuesday night? What springs to mind for you, Brian?
Well, I think it was a little misleading, that 5th win against Buffalo. Because if you watched the game, I felt like they didn't actually play that well for long stretches of that game. They just happened. I mean, Buffalo is that bad. And I think we just have to all kind of recognize that they are just done with their season, and they have no interest in winning hockey games until the end of it. They just want it over. It just kind of showed up. I mean, the Jackets ended up popping in the first period, and that game was basically over. And so I think the Jackets maybe didn't play their top game like they've been playing in the previous 4 games. And with this team, you know, like, bad habits can form quickly on this team. That's one thing I've noticed, is that, you know, when they start falling into bad habits, it goes quick. You know, it's not like, you know, this little ease into the bad habits, now we got to erase them. They go quick, and they fall hard. And I think that one of the things, I think they may have gotten lulled into a false sense of security a bit, thinking, hey, you know, we're going to come out here, we're going to do the Bruins what we did to them last time we played here, which was a 7-4 win. You know, we're going to be up and down the ice, and we're going to be scoring goals. And this is a Bruins team that had a number of players playing Tuesday that didn't play in the first game against Boston at Nationwide, the 7-4 win. One of them was defenseman Kevin Miller, who was just destroying people all over the ice in that game on Tuesday night. I mean, he was just in people's grills all night long, not giving anybody time and space, hitting people, dumping people. He played a great game, and that's one guy that they had in this game they didn't have in the other game. And the other one was David Pastrnak. They didn't have Pastrnak before. That's a pretty big superstar type guy not to have. They had him this game. I thought he played well. You know, they got out talented, like you said. They're outskilled, however you want to say it. But they also got outworked. Boston came out with fire in their eyes, and they were just hitting everything that moved. And then that fluky goal. Here's the other thing: the fluky goal, that first goal, it goes over Bob's head, the pop fly, could have called infield fly rule. You know, it comes down behind him, hits the net, bounces like a trampoline back at him, and sneaks across somehow, sneaks through him. Well, it's a fluky goal, yeah, but it puts them down.
It rolled down his back. It literally rolled down his back.
Yeah, it rolled down his back. Oh, yeah, like I hit him in like maybe the right shoulder back area, and then rolled right down into the net. And here's the thing: it's only one goal. It's early, super early in the game. I think it was like 1 minute and 58 seconds into the game, I believe.
Right.
So, but it puts them down by a goal. And this team, one thing I have noticed trend-wise with this team is that, I don't think there's a whole lot of teams that are per se good at going down a goal and then winning the game. I mean, it's a trend across the NHL. You don't want to go down by a goal because it's really hard to win. But this team especially, I think, and Nick Foligno mentioned something about this after the game. He was spot on. This team has had troubles when they go down by a goal. They open themselves up a little too much, too quick, too soon. And, you know, they're only down by a goal. And you're only down by a goal, and they almost tied it up in the next 2 or 3 shifts. Tuukka Rask made some great saves to keep it 1-0. And then, you know, eventually Boston goes up 2-0. Well, now you're down 2-0. But again, it's early. Still the first period. And I think that they do. I think they open themselves up a little bit, looking for offense, looking for those tying goals in those frustrating games where teams are playing well in the neutral zone. And it's trying to run in quicksand. You're just going to go, you're going to think faster, and open yourself up more. And then you're going to be down by 3 and 4 goals. That's what happens.
Right. To contrast that, you can see when they went into play, they played against the Islanders near the end of March there, the second game of their 5-game winning streak. Remember, they came back from Vancouver and they had the Islanders here. And the Islanders had shut them out a couple times, frustrated them. And they went into that game, the Jackets did, thinking, all right, we just got to stay patient here, play our game, and mind ourselves through each zone. playing in fives, as it were. And they did. And they played what was not a thrilling game, but a very efficient game against a team that'll drive you crazy if you let them. And they beat the Islanders. And the Bruins thing was sort of, here's what can happen when you don't do that, as you pointed out.
Yeah, and the difference is that the Bruins have some higher-end talent offensively than the Islanders have. So if they're going to play that way and they have high-end talent, I mean, you're playing with fire there, Scarecrow, if you keep playing like that, you know, and you don't, you know, take care of the puck and you turn it over against a team like the Bruins, they're going to make you pay. And they did.
And this was not Bobrovsky's fault. He was hung out to dry. I mean, every time you looked up, there was an odd man rush coming at him. And that's because they were, I don't know, cheating, trying to, you know, get themselves back in the game, little cherry picking. They got disjointed and Bob faced waves of Bruins coming at him. It was finally lifted with 4 minutes remaining in the second period with the score 4-0. We should say that prior to that, he was the goaltender of the week in his five previous games, 5-0 with a 0.80 and a 971 with three shutouts. He leads the league in shutouts, as tied for second in wins with 36. Nine shutouts, and he's going to be, it's a big weekend for Bob and the team. Do you have any feeling about this going forward, Brian? And one thing, let me just ask you first, if McQuaid is sidelined with a concussion, and that's what we suspect, he's missed three games. Yeah. He's missed the last three. And if it is concussion, Brian, do they allow him to get on a plane if he's day to day?
Well, that's the thing. He would probably have to clear his concussion protocol before leaving. That'd be today.
So that's,
we're going to find that out.
That's something for us to keep our eye on today.
Yep, absolutely. Well, I mean, because they did send Adam Clendenning back to Cleveland yesterday. They reassigned him. That doesn't mean they can't recall him and have him, you know, go with the team as the seventh defenseman if they need him. But by sending him down, they also have the rookie they signed on Monday, Andrew Peak. He could potentially travel and be like the seventh guy, the insurance guy, and, you know, just watch, obviously, unless he's, you know, needed in an emergency. I mean, they have some options, but I think obviously that the preference will be to get Adam McQuaid back and get him in there if physically his body lets him do that.
All right, we're going to cut out here for just a second and hear from our sponsor. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's an amazing day. Traveling our own highway. No matter where it leads us, we can smile. Because it's leaning in.
Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Do you have anything else you want to add before we sign off, Brian?
Just a little disappointed that you forgot the boom at the beginning of the thing. I think you're excited to get into the podcast. We had to get this thing cracking here. So I'm just going to give a little boom. There it is.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for that, Patrick. And no, just addled. Is it not excited? Just confused in my old age. In any case, the Jackets, let's just go over it again. Third place in the Metro, Pittsburgh. 97 points, 41 rows. They're home against Detroit tonight at New York Rangers Saturday. The Carolina Hurricanes holding the first wild card, 95 points, which is two behind Pittsburgh, 42 rows. They're home against the Devils tonight and at Philadelphia Saturday, Saturday being the last day of the regular season. The Jackets holding the second wild card, 94 points, 44 rows, at Rangers Friday night, at Ottawa Saturday. And Montreal, which is just on the other side of the bubble here, holding the third place among wildcard teams. They have 94 points, 41 rows. At Washington Thursday, tonight, and home against Toronto on Saturday. Hello, Canada, as Foster Hewitt used to say. And that's about it. It's going to be a crazy weekend, a crazy finish. If the Jackets do get into the playoffs, it'll mark, it's the third year in a row they've won 45 games, which is notable. It'll be their third consecutive playoff appearance, if my memory serves me, in what, fourth in 5 years or something like that?
I think so. Yeah. I have to check that out.
I have to go look that up. But anyway, there you have it. For at Brian Hedger and at the Podfather 2, Patrick Flaherty at the controls, I'm Mike Arace at Michael Arace 1. Join us at dispatch.com. For all of Brian's fine content, follow us at Dispatch Alerts or at our Twitter handles. We appreciate it. We'll be convening on Monday or Tuesday, and we'll talk about all this all over again. We'll have a lot to talk about then. Brian, thanks. Have a good day. Have a good flight, and we'll see you soon. Patrick, blow us out of here. Boom. There you go.
Boom.
This episode of Cannon Fodder has been brought to you by Marathon, fueling the American spirit. Cannon Fodder is available on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. Cannon Fodder, your Columbus Blue Jackets podcast, is made possible by Marathon, fueling the American spirit.